Stand by for action.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Punk Till I Die podcast. I'm Tom. Neil, say hello.
Hello. We got a slightly different one today. It's me and Tom, but we're not going to talk about gigs. We're not going to talk about record shopping. We're not going to talk about any of that stuff. We have a kind of a themed episode today, don't we, Tom, that
we decided to kick around. It's going to be really hard not to talk about some of those things. I'm sort of dying to talk about some of those things, but that'll be a different day. That between the upcoming festivals and record store day and all that stuff, we'll probably have to do a separate episode and do all that.
Yeah, and plus I know you went to a gig this week, and I've got I've got a few gigs coming up, so yeah. It's going to be a busy few weeks, I think.
I will say that I got a text message from our friend Mike the Mailman when he heard that I'd gone to that Disturbed show, and he said that it was minus 10 punk points for going to see the Wah! Band.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
And I say to you, Mike, minus 5 punk points for knowing that they were the Wah! Band.
Okay, please to explain. I don't know what that means.
Well, that's just their most famous song. The singer goes, Wah! It's like this Wah! Thing he does.
Wow. Interesting. Yes. Okay.
Sounds like he's having a spaz attack or something. Can you still say spaz?
We can on this show for sure. We can say whatever we want.
Sounds like he's having a spaz attack. So anyway, so we got some, and of course, March, we're going to jump right in. April looks a little slow, but March and May, man, is going to be busy. So you'll be hearing much of us talking about, you know, our adventures. So
yes, indeed. Indeed you will.
So, Neil, why don't you explain, I'm not exactly sure, I think somebody reached out to us and asked us about this, and so it's sort of a cross between a reader idea and your idea, right? So tell me how you came up with this concept for this show that we're about to do.
Yeah, I had this idea a while ago, probably a couple years ago. Punk News used to do like a show occasionally, right, where they just focus on one band or something, you know, and just talk about one
did
band
we?
For a couple. Yeah, you did one. I think you did a Ramones one, and John played a bunch of.
I might have slept through that.
But he would play like a Dee Dee Ramone song and a Johnny Ramone song. It was weird. He did weird stuff. But anyway, I got to thinking, yeah, maybe we should just do a show where we concentrate on one band. But then I got to thinking, well, even, you know, we don't want to do that because everyone knows the first Ramones albums. Everybody knows, you know, the classics. Everybody knows those. So then I was thinking, well, how about if we concentrate on some of the later albums by some of those well-known bands, the ones that people either didn't listen to much or didn't hear at all because they didn't, you know, they only wanted to stick at the classics.
Yeah.
And then I got to thinking, well, how about we do two? I do one and you do one. And that's what we're going to do today. Tom is going to cover the last 6 studio albums by the Ramones. I'm going to cover the last 6 studio albums by the Buzzcocks. And probably a lot of people don't even know that the Buzzcocks had 6 studio albums after, you know, the classic lineup broke up. But yeah, they did.
So let me ask you this, qualifying.
Yes, sir.
The Buzzcocks have done an album or an EP or something since Pete Shelley died. Will that be in the conversation, or was that an EP, or what was the deal with that?
It was an album, and it will not be.
Okay.
This is only going to be Pete Shelley stuff.
So as my kids would say, that's not canon.
No, it's not canon, and I'm still pissed off that Steve Diggle decided to keep that name and not alter it at all. I mean, I know he was an original of the band, but still, show a little bit of class.
You should have got the guy who was on the first EP back.
Howard DeVoto and Steve Diggle hate each other.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, hate each other with a fiery passion.
Well, they should call the band the Cockbuzz.
Well, they should have changed the name somehow, right? They should have done like I was
Buzzcocks
thinking
DC.
I was thinking Buzzcocks PS. to like Pete Shelley, but also PS, meaning, you know, after postscript or whatever, there you right? Go, see? That would have made if complete sense.
But for, 77.
But for some reason, he decided to keep the whole fucking name, even though it's, you know, it's a different band. And that album they put out 2 years ago, which was called Sonics in the Soul, even though it's in under the Buzzcocks name, it's just Steve Diggle songs, and it really isn't very good at all. So okay. that is not going to be included in my list today.
The other thing worth noting, when I was looking at the Ramones, you kind of don't count the covers album.
I don't.
Just and like I have decided to count the covers album. I think it's their worst album, but I think it is worthy of a little bit of. I mean, it's worth owning, I think. So maybe on, you know, A-track. So I did include that. So just for the record, and I skipped the live albums. The only Ramones live album I really care about is It's Alive, of course, which was came out in 79. So
for sure, yeah. I wouldn't. I personally don't count Acid Eaters as one of their studio albums. I kind of count it in the same way as the live albums. Okay. I don't really count.
Well, then we're gonna have to part company on that.
No, but it's fine. This is your list, my friend.
Because and we'll kind of talk about I'll do a real brief. You know, I'm not an expert on the Ramones. I love the Ramones. I pay a lot of attention to them. I read a lot of books about them, but I'm not claiming to be a scholar. And I'm sure you're the same way with the Buzzcocks. You know, so I'm gonna kind of we'll kind of give some brief sort of history as we go. I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll do the best we can on the brief history. Album year. You know, who was recording on it? Because it's going to be one of the interesting things about the Buzzcocks is everybody thinks of Buzzcocks as being that classic lineup.
Yeah.
Pete Shelley, Steve Diggle, you know, John Marr, and Steve Garvey. Even though they were only really together for that lineup was only together for like 3.5 years.
Yeah, the bass player they got now is probably with them for like 22 years or something, right?
Not the current one, but yeah, there was one that was there for like 25 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that. So, anything else before we kick off on our adventure?
Anything no, go
you
ahead.
Want to say?
The Buzzcocks were the first show you ever saw? No.
Buzzcocks were the first band I ever saw live. Yep. Yeah. That was October 1978 on the Love Bites tour. It wasn't called Love. I think it was called Beating Hearts was the name of the tour or something like that. Yeah, I saw him with Subway Sect at Liverpool Empire, October 78. So, yeah, they were one of the first bands I ever really loved. So I guess this is a good way for me to do this. Now, do you want me to go first, or do you want to do the Ramones first?
You go first.
Okay. So
we'll go alphabetical.
Okay. So, Buzzcocks. Okay, so that classic lineup with Steve Garvey playing bass. Let's see. The last studio album, A Different Kind of Tension, 1979, and I saw them on that tour as well. That was the one they toured with Joy Division, and but it was evident that things were not going well with the band. Like even live, they weren't talking to each other. They didn't look like they were having a very good time. And
the Ramones did that for 20 years.
Yeah, right. After that tour, they didn't release another studio album. They were supposedly recording their fourth album, but instead they put out a series of three singles, which were okay, but they weren't like any of the classic Buzzcocks singles, right? And then that lineup split for good in 1981, and I thought that was it. And then I was just, you know, this is, I moved to Chicago by this time, because I moved to Chicago in 89, and I was just reading through, leafing through the Chicago Reader one day in, like, summer 89, and it says, Metro, Buzzcocks. I'm like, what the fuck is this about? And sure enough, they decided to reform that original lineup for a tour in 1989, and it took in all the major cities, including Chicago, which, yeah, I went to see them at the Metro, and they were really, really good, but anyway, that original lineup, but they didn't really last much more than that US tour. I think they'd released a 4-track EP or something, which wasn't particularly good. But, anyway, John Marr, the drummer, left to I think he has a Volkswagen shop in one of the outer islands of Scotland. Is his real job. And Steve Garvey moved to New York, I believe. Oh, maybe I've got that wrong. Maybe Steve Garvey's the guy with the Volkswagen thing. Anyway, so they left, but Steve Diggle and Pete decided to carry on, and they recruited a bass player called Tony Barber and a drummer called Phil Barker. And I think they joined in like 91, something like that, 1991.
So at this point, we're 10 years without an LP.
Yep. And in fact, they were much like the Ramones had Elvis Ramone, you know, Clem Burke from Blondie as a drummer for a while. Yeah,
2 years.
The Buzzcocks, before they got Phil Barker, they actually had Mike Joyce, the drummer for the Smiths, actually played with him for a short period of time. So there's some actual videos on YouTube of like some weird amalgamation of the band with Steve Garvey still playing bass, but the guy from the Smiths playing drums, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, so... Yeah, Tony Barber and Phil Barker joined the band in like 91, 92. And in 1993, they released their first studio album in 14 years. It was called Trade Test Transmissions. And actually, it was a return to form. These were clearly songs they'd had kicking around for 10 years. Probably some songs on it were ones that they'd had recorded originally for that fourth album. And it's really fucking good. Now, I bought it. I think the day or two it came out, and it was a very limited vinyl release, so actually the vinyl is worth some decent money.
Yeah, it was definitely CD era.
Yeah, CD era 93. And, of course, the CD had some additional tracks that weren't on the album, so I felt kind of gypped by that, but I'm sure I probably bought the CD as well. But yeah, this was... It's a really, really good album. Like I say, it's the one that feels most like the original lineup. And, fully fleshed out. I think there's like 12 songs on it. And so I'm going to play a song on it now. What did I pick? I am going to play the song Do It. So this is Buzzcocks with Do It from Trade Test Transmissions from 1993. All right. That was the first of the later Buzzcocks tonight. That was, Do It from Trade Test Transmissions from 93, which was on Caroline Records. I'm not quite sure where that was out of. The interesting thing is every one of these later Buzzcocks albums was on a different album.
I'll say Caroline was like, that's what like the Misfits albums were on when they, it's a big label.
Right.
Like The later Misfits.
Yeah, I recognize the name, but that was their only album for Caroline. So
interesting.
Yeah. So over to you there, buddy.
Obviously, I don't think I need to go into too much of the early history of the Ramones. Obviously, CBGB's in New York and all that. Johnny, Joey, Dee Dee, and Tommy. But I kind of break their career into like three chunks. Even though I'm tempted to break it into like five chunks, but you know, the first, I'm going to say four albums. The first three albums are basically perfection, and then Tommy left. After Rock to Rush of the third album, and Marky came in, and that album is still very, very good, but they started to play around with their sound a little bit. There's two songs specifically on that album that are kind of weird. Don't Come Close and Questioningly. And they almost, Questioningly almost has like a tiny country influence or something?
It does, yeah. It's a little bit country.
And they're cheesy, yeah. And you can tell, it's also one of those songs, and if you're a big fan of the band, you could tell which songs Johnny didn't really do the guitar on. And both of those songs are songs that, you can hear Johnny underneath, you can hear his electric guitar, but it had like studio guys doing the weird little guitar licks.
Oh, is that right? Didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I kind of grouped those four albums together because they're like the classic, no questions asked classic era, even though, like I said, the third one could kind of go either way. But then, of course, the fifth album was the disastrous Phil Spector end of the century, which is just a decent songs. When you hear them played live, they're pretty cool, but it's just a horrific idea for an album. But obviously the band at that point, you know, they wrote pop songs. They wanted to be rock stars. You know, they wanted to be big. They weren't limited to that 80s hardcore sort of mentality of everything has to be independent, everything has to be underground. Hadn't really started to seep into the scene yet. They were trying to make make some money being rock stars.
Well, they're trying to be the Beach Boys or something, weren't they? Trying to be something.
And yeah. Obviously, that record, I don't think it sold any worse than the others. Like, it's funny, you look at the history of the band, they were so consistent, you know, but they never got close to, like, breaking through the mainstream, but they were very consistent.
That's got some great songs on it, that album, though.
It does, you know, Danny Says, and, you know...
Rocks, I mean...
Yeah, Rock and Roll High School.
This ain't Nevada. In fact, almost every song is good, it's just the production is...
Yeah, you know, Maybe great. I Love You is probably a little questionable, even though, like...
I agree.
If it didn't have all the nonsense, it'd probably be pretty decent, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the next couple albums, Pleasant Screams was the next one, which was okay, but they went with an outside producer. Once again, I think...
Guys from 10cc produced it.
Yes, Chasing a Hit, you know? And it just didn't work. The Tommy production was just... He knew what to do with the band. Tommy was the producer of the early stuff. And then Subterranean Jungle, which is probably, other than the covers album, is their worst album.
Yeah, it's a mishmash.
Got a couple of great songs. I mean, Outsider, Psychotherapy. You know, it's got a couple of classic Ramones songs on it. But overall, some bad covers, not very cohesive. Just not a really good album. A band that's falling apart. You can see on the cover, classically, you know, famously has Marky like separated from the rest of the band.
Yeah, just kind of almost like grayed out, looking out the window. Hopefully, right? Because was it heroin he was hooked on, or why did they kick him out?
He's just a drunk. Yeah, okay. Just a drunk.
Just a drunk.
And all then, right. Of course, the comeback album that sort of righted the ship, which was Too Tough to Die, which was Richie's first album with the band.
Yeah.
So you still had your classic Johnny, Joey, Dee Dee, and Richie playing drums. Too Tough to Die was a great album. It was produced right. It sounded good. If you read about the time frame, there was a lot of hardcore bands coming up, and they did not have any respect for the Ramones that they should have, and they were kind of pissing on them, and the Ramones were like, well, screw you guys. We'll show you that we can still play fast and play hard. And like the title track is great. I'm trying to think what the I'm Not Afraid of Life. Just a lot of great songs on it. Had a few elements of the production that were kind of wonky, added instruments and stuff. But for the most part, Too Tough to Die was a return to form. And overall, great album. A lot of people's, like, kind of a lot of fan favorites after the first four. So this is, so unfortunately, we're not starting there, Lenny. We're starting after that. We're starting with Animal Boy.
Right, Animal Boy, and that would still be there. Let's see, what which album is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, that ninth studio album. Yep. Animal Boy, 1986, correct?
Yep.
Yep.
Had some great songs. Ones you know, probably know the title track. Love Kills, a Dee Dee sung song about Sid and Nancy. Somebody Put Something in My Drink. My Brain Is Hanging Upside Down about Ronald Reagan. She Belongs to Me was kind of the ballad. A lot of great songs. I mean,
it does.
Closes with a great Ramones song that is absolutely destroyed by cheesy production, which is Something to Believe In.
The production is indeed cheesy.
It's got like bells, and it's just, they just kill it. It's a great song.
Yeah. Now, Somebody Put Something in My Drink, one of the famous songs off that album, that was written by Richie, wasn't it?
I believe it was. Richie wrote a few of the songs, and it was about a real event where somebody poisoned Joey.
Okay, yeah.
In Europe, I think. Like I said, I read all these books, but I've read so many. But anyway, the song I picked is not one of the big hits, but, you know, it reminds me so much of modern life. You know, you buy an appliance, it only lasts for 10 years. You know, everything breaks, and everything is just cheap and shitty and Chinese. And so I always think of this song whenever I break something new.
Okay. So this, you sound like one of the Godoys there, buddy.
So this is
cheap and Chinese.
This is the Ramones from Animal Boy singing Crummy Stuff.
Crummy Stuff. Ramones there with Crummy Stuff off of
Animal Boy,
the last of the famous six that Tom is talking about tonight. I got some good memories of that one, because by 86 I'd moved back to the States.
Okay.
And I got married in 86.
Okay.
And we were living in a shitty guy house up and down in Champaign, and my buddy Randy, who does Skate in Illinois. We have a lot of happy memories of us just getting drunk, skating in the day, and then at night listening to Animal Boy. And for that stupid Ape Man Hop song with the doing all the stupid ape noises beginning of it. It's just a good album, man. It's just a funny album. And even that album cover, doesn't it have like a stupid monkey in the background
holding,
or something?
Yeah, I think Richie is like holding a chimpanzee or something.
Well, he is, but there's like an angry gorilla behind them.
Oh, yeah.
Like behind a cage or something. It's so fucking cheesy. But,
well, the funny thing, too, that I didn't mention, and I will, because this is true for the next couple of albums. Once again, a different style of production. were almost like a weird, like, heavy metal type of production, and it was really, really clunky. I mean, the songs overcame it, but man, I do not like the production on it. It's a little better. That box set that just came out, the vinyl box set, it's a little better, but man, the CDs from that era were real clunky sounding, real hollow in the middle, real thunky, cluddy.
It was produced by Jean Beauvoir, I believe, right?
I don't know who that is.
He was the bass player. Do you remember Little Steven, the guitarist for Bruce Springsteen?
Sure.
He had a band called Little Steven and his Disciples of Soul.
Yep, I think he still does.
And Jean Beauvoir played bass for them. So that's how I know that.
Well, that's funny because I feel like the next two albums suffer from the same type of production. I don't think it's the same people. So I don't know if that was the style of the time or what.
Must have been the style at the time. Yeah, I don't know what else he. I don't know what else he produced, but yeah, he produced.
I wore an onion on my belt, which was the style of the time.
Was that a vague Simpsons reference?
Yes.
I thought I remembered that one. Yes. Okay, are you handing it back over to me now?
Yeah, it's all back to you, buddy.
All right, Buzzcocks. Okay, so Trade Test Transmissions didn't do particularly well, but the Buzzcocks, they kept, they kept doing their thing in the background.
Kept buzzing.
Touring and stuff, yeah. So, it was, I think, 3 years later, 1996, they released the album All Set, which, if you've seen the cover, it's a yellow cover with, like, a black and white checkerboard going across it. Very minimal. Mm-hmm. They obviously didn't have a lot of money behind them at this point. This was on IRS Records. And
another indie label. I mean, wasn't that what REM was on before they got signed?
It's what's his name? Copeland, Aaron Copeland, Jesus Christ.
Oh, the guy from The Police's brother.
Yeah, this guy from The Police's brother, Stuart Copeland's brother. Yeah. Well, I have a book by, but it's an incredibly dull book. Jesus Christ, it's horrible. But anyway,
it's as dull as Sting's solo material.
yeah. And it's 8 hour sex sessions. But yeah, All Set is actually a really good album. It's almost like the one that got away because it's very, very difficult to find on vinyl. In fact, I had to send it away to Japan for it, believe it or not, so it cost me a pretty penny. But yeah, I mean, like I say, it's very minimal design work on it, because the Buzzcocks were always known for their classic design work, right, on their singles and stuff. This had none of that. It looks like it went to, like, a 15-year-old for
high school design project.
Exactly. And there's no inside sleeve or anything, but it's actually, the sad sleeve actually hides some really good songs inside. Short, snappy, just good.
Poppy.
Pete Shelley songs.
Punk songs.
Yeah. I saw them on this tour as well. I saw them at the Metro. And, in fact, I got a T-shirt. And the T-shirt, as of the time, because we're talking 96, mid-90s. So the T-shirt, you know, middle of Britpop. So the bands couldn't do, like, regular-style T-shirts anymore. Do you remember this? A lot of bands were just doing, like, logos went down the side or on the shoulder or something. Everyone was trying to be different. The All Set T-shirt I had was, like, a V-neck. It was a blue shirt, V-neck, white cap. Neck and sleeves, and it had just had the bullshit fucking checkerboard thing across the chest. It said Buzzcocks really small. Sounds on the left. Yeah, it was a terrible shirt. I think the first time I watched it, the colors ran, so the white neck turned like pale blue. It was a fucking awful shirt, but there we go. Anyway, so that's All Set from 1996. And what song am I going to play? I'm going to play the song Totally From the Heart, which, again, is a great, great song. So, yeah, Buzzcocks off of All Set. This is Totally From the Heart. You want more than I can deliver. I love you more than you could ever know now. Make the pain from the start. Totally from the heart. I'm to you like the mountain to Mohammed. But these roads could be juxtaposed. It's up to you now. Make the pain from the start. Totally from the heart. Totally from the heart. Can't you hear a word I'm saying? Totally from the heart. Every night I lie here praying. Totally from the heart. I'm so scared of being alone.
start. Totally from the heart.
Alright, Buzzcocks there with Totally From The Heart, which might be actually the first song off of All Set. The production isn't that great on that, probably, again, because it was recorded mainly for CD, and then the CD master was used to press the vinyl, so it doesn't sound that great. And one of the notable things about it is there's a song on there called Pariah, which I was actually going to play it, but I decided to do the other one instead because it gets a little bit long. But the beginning of Pariah, it's the drum beat beginning is totally lifted from the famous Moving Away From The Pulse beat off the first album.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a bit of a tie-in there. So, gotcha. Yeah, they still had some of the classic sound going on. So, yeah, that's a really good album. I would say buy it if you can find it.
Hmm. So we're back to the Ramones. So we're to halfway to Sanity, 1987. That's one thing about the Ramones versus, you know, the Buzzcocks or Ramones versus almost anybody. You know, they managed to put out an album every 2 years max.
Yeah, right. Yep, they did.
And sometimes to their benefit, sometimes not. But so halfway to Sanity was very much Animal Boy Part 2, but not quite as good.
Huh.
But it had some great songs on it, and it had some Richie songs on it. I know I'm Not Jesus was a Richie song. I Know Better Now, I think, was a Richie song. It's got Go Lil Camaro, which you like. I do not.
That's got Debbie Harry doing backing vocals.
Yeah. I mean, it's okay, but Bop Till You Drop was kind of a minor one for them. But my favorite on this record was always, it's actually kind of a serious song. It always kind of sat in a weird spot, and I told you, like, when I was a kid, the first thing I ever got was by the Ramones was Ramones Mania, which is like a 30 song collection of just from the first 8 albums or whatever, and I or 10 albums or whatever, and I always loved the song I Want to Live, even though it was kind of serious, and I suspect, once again, non-Johnny guitar work. I think they would play this one live, but it was much, they didn't have all the fluffy guitar lines over the top. It was just a basic, like, rhythm track. So, yeah, let's play that. This is, I'm sure a lot of people know. I mean, this is pretty well-known Ramones song, right?
I think so, yeah. I think so, for sure. Yeah.
My second choice is Garden of Serenity, which I love also.
I think Weasel Face might be my favorite song off this record.
Is that a DZ? Is that a DD song?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
DZ doesn't sing it. I mean, you know if DD's singing because he's a terrible singer.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So who was this one produced by? This was produced by Daniel Ray. There you go.
Oh, back to their kind of roots, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay, yeah, so we're going to play that. Yeah, I Want to Live.
I Want to Live, 1987.
With diamonds and jewels. Oh, then my lover exposes me, and I know I'm just a damn fool. I give what I got to give. I give what I need to live. I give what I got to give. It's important if I wanna live. a fine German steel. I never thought I'd be so down in hell. Having my last meal, but I know I can do it. It just took a few years as I execute my killers. The morning is near. I give what I got to give. I give what I need to live. I give what I got to give. It's important if I want to live. I want to live. But I want to live my life. I want to live.
Now, when did you buy these, Tom? When did you buy these on CD later on? Do you have all the albums on CD, or do you have them all on vinyl, or what?
I do have them all on CD. I have most of them on vinyl. The only ones I don't have on vinyl are the... And I know you had to hunt to get these, too. After they left Sire, at the end, towards the end of their career, they made their albums on... I think it was Radioactive or something?
Yep.
It was like a... I want to say it was a label run by their manager or something stupid like that. So those last three I don't have.
Okay. Yeah, they were difficult to find. I actually do have, again, like much like the Buzzcocks, because I am a completist, as you know, I do have all original albums on the original vinyl, none of the Russian bootlegs or whatever. And you're right, those last two were Mondo Bizarro and Adios Amigos were very difficult. Not as difficult as the Buzzcocks one, but they were difficult to find and they were expensive.
Well, it's funny because that Ramones Mania album went through Halfway to Sanity.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
That was okay. How far it went. Yeah, so it didn't have Brain Drain, and it didn't have the... Well, it says Mondo Bizarro was on Chrysalis. Interesting. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'll get to that. Actually, I'll have a story when we get to Mondo Bizarro. So anyway.
I mean, I think so far, the ones you've talked about, I think they're both pretty much of a equal quality, I think.
Yeah, they're similar, and they sound very similar. They have a similar sound.
They do. I do. They're very consistent, you know, which is good. Yeah. Again, I
sometimes it's just they do, like, Something to Believe In. Like I said, great rock and roll song, but they just felt the need to embellish it with too much cheesiness instead of just letting it be, like, a raw rock and roll song, you know? I don't want to say they ruined it, because I was listening to the Ramones half the day today at work, and I was singing my head off.
I bet.
That song. But because I don't have Spotify Premium, so it just jumps all over the place. So it'll go from Blitzkrieg Bop to She Talks to Rainbows or whatever, just all over the place, and I love it. It was great. It really rings a bell. It really drives home the fact that although their sound certainly changed over the years, all their stuff is really listenable, you know?
Well, you can always tell it's them, too. So yeah. one of the nice things about it is, as well... And, you know, younger bands, listen to this for a hint. You know, they'll do a super fast song, like I'm Not Jesus or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they'll go to a ballad next, Bye Bye Baby is the next one. So they all sound like the Ramones, but they're all different pace, different structures, all that kind of thing. So it's, they're not as simple as it would seem.
It's funny. I'm trying to think. I think it was probably Road to Ruin, their fourth album, where the song started to have multiple verses. I mean, the first album, literally, it was just the same verse and same chorus repeated over and over. You know, the
second verse, same as the first,
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, look, listen to their original great ballad, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend. It's just literally the same thing repeated three times, and smell you later.
Again, very much like a classic 60s pop song.
Yeah, I guess.
Early 60s, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man, we're fucking tearing through these.
What year are we up to in Buzzcocks land?
In Buzzcocks. Okay, so you were just saying, What the hell have I done here? You were saying the Buzzcocks, the Ramones managed to put albums out every couple of years. The Buzzcocks did not. That was probably because
they couldn't keep the band together.
They just didn't have any money behind them. Like I say, they kept jumping from label to label, and they probably didn't have the money or the will to stay together as a full time band. I mean, they toured a lot because I saw them numerous times over the 90s, and they would always hit Chicago, so that was cool. Oftentimes, different places too, but yeah, they clearly didn't have a lot.
They were doing like they had like the Spinal Tap thing. They were like every time they come back, it was a slightly smaller venue than the time they played before.
Oh, pretty much. So, yeah, so when I saw them, actually, I saw them, okay, so the next album is Modern, okay? It came out in 1999, so they're basically doing, like, every 3 years. So
That's Trade Test
Transmission was 93, All Set was 96, Modern was 99. This one is probably the worst Buzzcocks album by far. Because what they did, the album's called Modern, and they tried to incorporate synths and stuff into the classic Buzzcocks sound, which does not work. So they got synths, they got like weird electronic like synth drums. It's just all over the fucking place. It's just kind of a mess, to be honest. The worst, and it's also poorly produced. Again, probably it was, you know, mastered for CD, and they just pressed that on the vinyl, so it's kind of lacking a lot of bass. It's just not really rich. The guitars are way dialed down. Like I say, there's synths and stuff in the four, and those weird synth drums. They're just fucking old. Like, what are they called? Electric drums? Whatever.
Triggers or whatever. Things.
Yeah, fucking awful.
Yeah, I agree.
And then some weird computer noise on some of it. And the funny thing was,
well, they called it Modern. They wanted it to be Modern.
Yeah, but even then, it really isn't, because like Kraftwerk was doing that 20 years ago.
Gary Newman's, you know, like, what are you talking about,
Modern? Yeah, right. So and the weirdest thing was, when they toured that album, they actually tried to produce that some of that stuff live, and it just was not good at all.
Did they bring a keyboard player with them?
I don't, you know what, I don't remember. I saw that one at Metro too, and by now Metro was only about half full. For these guys, it was kind of sad, to be honest. It was just not great. That would be the one that, if I was to say, if you wanted to miss one, it would be, you'd miss that one. And I'm sure somebody out there is probably screaming that that's their favorite later Buzzcocks album, but I just think it's just not great.
That's the best one, Neil. It's very California.
Here's the thing. Here's how bad it was. When I was trying to pick a song to play off of it, I was having a really hard time.
Did you recognize
the song? You know, and then I started listening to some of the songs back, and I was like, "Oh Jesus, these are just not good at all." So,
sorry, people.
The one I've picked is a song called "Thunder of Hearts," which I'll play in a second. If you ever see this one in a store, it's like a pale blue cover with Buzzcocks in pink top left, and it says Modern bottom right. Again, there's no graphic design to it at all, really. It's on Go-Kart Records. I think Go-Kart.
A little punk, a little indie punk label here.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I don't think they had any money behind them at all. All right, well, let's listen to one of the shitty songs off of Modern. This is Thunder of Hearts by the Buzzcocks off Modern from 1999.
Tell me why you look the other way. I've been tired of being blind from staring at the sun. No cause for celebration tonight. Okay, right, you win. Even monkeys fall from trees. The die is cast, your mind's made up. We're going on our way. In my life, this is happening to me. You live what you learn. I'll beg, steal, and borrow. The thunder of hearts will echo tomorrow. Okay, ride you in. I'll always remember. I've said you've not heard. When you die again forever. It's not much of a mystery. I need things
to ignore. Well, more than three. I want it to be perfect. What it should be. No chance of celebration tonight. You live what you earn. I beg, steal, or borrow. The thunder of hearts will echo tomorrow. Okay, right, you win. But always remember, I've said no.
All right, Thunder of Hearts there off of Modern by Buzzcocks. And it gives me no joy to say that, because I absolutely adore the Buzzcocks, but that is just not a a good album, I'm afraid to say.
It happens.
Well, yeah, it does happen, but the good news is they had a return to form on the next one, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So, the good thing about the Ramones is they didn't do a version of Modern, did they? They didn't have one with lots of synths in it.
No, they had too much synth when they did any synth. But well, it's funny because so we're up to Brain Drain actually,
mm-hmm.
Which man, I think another album I think underrated. Once again, the production was a little weird on it, but I'm trying to find. I think Marky's back on that one, right? I can't verify it for sure, but I believe that Marky's back on Brain Drain.
I'm not quite sure. Sure, to tell you the truth, I don't know.
I'm looking at the credits in Discogs, and I can't find it. Anyway, I believe Marky's back on that one. Richie wanted to be a fair cut in the money, and they threw him out. So
yeah, because he was getting paid like gig to gig in cash, wasn't he, or something like that.
He was basically like a hired gun.
Yeah. Which Johnny talks about that a lot in his book.
And Marky had sobered up by this point. Dee Dee had not, but Marky had sobered up by this point. Also, this is the Marky return, and it also is the last Dee Dee album.
That's correct, yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, once again, a bunch of great Ramones songs on this, right? I mean, Pet Sematary is obviously kind of a, you know, like my kids love this album. Punishment Fits a Crime, Pet Sematary, Palisades Park.
Which I love that cover. Palisades Park is one of my favorite Ramones covers.
00 UFO, Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight. It's kind of become a classic in its own right. Just a great, great album, man. And some of these songs, like I said, like Pet Sematary, that's kind of like a song that I think has people know now, I think, with the movies and stuff, but maybe not.
I'd imagine most people know that. And just to butt in a second, yes, Marky was on this album. September 88, Marky, now clean and sober, returned to the band.
There you go.
And the bass parts on this album were played by Daniel Ray and the bass player for the Dictators, Andy Shernoff.
Also, Dee Dee did not play on this.
No, he just did vocals.
I think he toured with this album yet, though.
He did. Okay. He did tour with the album, yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, unfortunately, we're getting to that dark period in music history where Dee Dee left the Ramones to pursue his rap career.
Yes, Jesus
Christ. And remember when we had Jeff Palmer on, we talked about that, right?
It's yeah.
Like, some people really like that album. What was it called? It was under the Dee Dee King moniker. It was called Standing in the Spotlight or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Yes,
and some people consider it a classic. I think it's just awful. I mean, it's not even
classically
funny.
Shit. No, it's yeah. it's embarrassing. It's like
I'd rather listen to Two Life Crew.
It's like laughing at a retard, isn't it? I mean,
well, and you know, and you read, you hear about that era of the band. So you know, Johnny was the taskmaster of the band, and he called the shots. And like, when it came time to replace Dee Dee, I know he just hired CJ and told the other guys, here's the new guy, you know. But Dee Dee was showing up for practice, like in his bucket hats with big gold chains and wearing Adidas and stuff. And Johnny's just like, yeah, yeah, this, you know, they sort of had a uniform, like you had, like,
the had the leather jacket, of course, yeah.
Leather jacket, blue jeans, you know, pretty casual, you know, work casual, but, so yeah, this is 1989. So this would have been, I was 16 when this album came out. It was on my radar, definitely. I'm actually going to once again play the opening track just because I love this song. I think it's one of their classic songs. It's called I Believe in Miracles. I'm sure most people know this one. So check it out.
Miracles there off of the first track off of Brain Drain. And I got a funny story about this one. I was still living in Champaign, but I was about to leave to come up to Chicago in 89. And I heard, when did this album come out? Was it like mid-89? It was like June or something like that?
I do not have that information.
I think it is. I think it was like June because I left to come up to Chicago in like September. So I think it was like June. And for some reason, I still assumed the Ramones were a fairly big deal because they were to me. So yeah. I actually went to the, I think it was like a Coconut Records or something in the mall in Urbana. It was up on the second floor, and I was there waiting for the store to open, thinking they were already going to have like a couple of copies or something, and I had to be first in line so I could buy it on the day it was released. And of course, there was nobody in the store, and people looked at me like I was fucking crazy for buying a Ramones album still. They're like, are those guys still going?
Did they have it?
Yeah, they had it, yeah. Yeah, and I still have it today. The same copy. So, but it was funny. They were just Now, and it's got that fucking awful cover art too.
I don't mind that. I don't mind it at all.
And the Ramones albums are supposed to have fucking Ramones on the cover in black leather jackets. They're not supposed to have some weird sketch of a guy with his head on fire or whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah, you're right. They did pretty much have photos, didn't they? But yeah, that was, I don't know. I like the cover. I like everything about that album.
I think Johnny says that they decided to do that because he thought they were starting to look too old to be on, to look too cool on the cover. I think he says that in his book. Have you read his book?
I haven't. I got to read that. Commando, right?
Yeah. It's really good because he's just very blunt and honest, as you would expect him to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said the band he said he was going to break up the band when he had $1 million in cash underneath his floorboards.
Well, so. He said he was going to make everybody in that band a millionaire too. I mean, it's hard to help Dee Dee when he won't stop shooting into his vein, and it's hard to help Joey when he's such a weirdo, you know. But it turns out none of them needed that much of a nest egg to live their short lives.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, on the Dee Dee thing too, you know, I don't remember where I read it, but they're talking about Dee Dee was sober, was clean, and then he got in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and then, like, he was partying after, and he had a relapse or something, and he got some heroin, he shot him, he died. But he had been clean for a couple of years at that point. So it really is sad.
Well, was that when he was living in Detroit or whatever? Remember Hiawatha telling some stories?
No, this would have been later, right? I think this would, and I don't think he died in Detroit, did he?
I don't know, idea. No idea where he died.
I mean, a lot of people do, but I don't think he was one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, apparently. I remember when he died. You know, obviously the Joey died was the gut kick, but we kind of knew, like, Johnny had cancer,
right?
We knew, and with Joey, we knew he was sick, but I don't think, like I said, the cancer actually didn't really kill him. That's the sad thing about that one. He fell down in the.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Broke his hip, and he, like an old person, and like lay there in the sidewalk for a long time before anybody found him.
Yeah, it's very sad. So, I mean, did you ever hear those rumors about, because they recorded that video for Pet Sematary or whatever, and supposedly there was some kind of where they dug that, you know, they go into that, get lowered into the ground, and you've seen that video, right?
I remember reading about how it was kind of a nightmare or something.
They dig a grave, and the band gets lowered into the grave or something like that. But anyway, someone said that it was dug on some kind of old fallout site or something, and that's where they got the cancer from. Just one of those old wives' tales.
But
it is funny though. The three of them died within, you know.
Yeah, pretty quick, 3 years or something. Yeah, well, no, it was 2001. Johnny was, it might have been like 3 years.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because, Johnny and Dee Dee were there for the Hall of Fame induction. Joey was gone. And, they didn't last long after.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if there's any truth in that, but I remember hearing that rumor that there was something.
I thought you were going to say it was like an ancient Indian burial ground or something.
Yeah. Well, that's the movie. I mean, I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
I like the original, and I even didn't think the remake was that bad. I love Fred Gwynne.
Oh, Fred, that's right. Fred Gwynne was
the neighbor.
Yeah, that's right.
Herman Munster, man.
Yeah, well, there we go. All right, so for the Buzzcocks now, we fast forward 4 years. And they shake that weird modern synth shit out of their veins, and they very much go back to form on this album. This album was self-titled. It's the one that looks like a punk rock album. It's just like a black and white cover, and says, and it's got like a grainy, almost cut-out photograph of them.
That was an American label, was it? Was it No Idea or something?
In England,
1, 2, 3, 4, Go or something.
It was Cherry Red.
Oh, Cherry Red.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, Go. No, you're thinking of The Way, which was the
single. Oh, The Way, yeah.
So this was kind of similar, except it was a black cover with like a white, almost newspaper picture of Steve Diggle on the front. And it says Buzzcocks top left in pink. I think in the States it was released on Merge Records. In England it was Cherry Red. And musically, very much a return to punk rock form. No trace of synths on this one. It was, just basically a punk rock album. Steve Diggle, I think, wrote half the songs on it. Short songs, fast songs. I don't know if it was recorded for vinyl, because this one actually sounds good too. It's just it's just a great record. It even has you know, for the very first recordings they did, for the, which became the Time's Up bootleg, they did a song called Lester Sands, and they do a reprise of Lester Sands on this, which is actually almost more aggressive than the version that was on Time's Up. It's just a great album. I like it a lot, and like I say, return to form. And let's see, who was in the band at this point? It was still Pete, Steve, Tony Barber, and Phil Barker. So, you know, they were to be in the band.
That 90s lineup lasted a lot longer than the 70s lineup.
Yeah, no shit. They lasted probably 15, 16 years. So, yeah, that was a good lineup for those guys. I saw them the next time they played Chicago. They played Double Door.
Long gone Double Door.
Yeah, I don't know if you ever saw Double Door, but man, that was a long, thin venue.
Only there one time, but yeah.
I don't know how many people it held. It was difficult to say because there was the back area where the merch was, and then there was the area by the stage. Probably like
500?
Yeah, maybe 400 or 500, yeah. You know, a pretty small stage. So, well, yeah, I actually, one of my friends from Manchester was visiting during the time of that show. So we went to the gig together, and it was a fucking blast.
Like being home.
The band were actually the new, and they weren't really new by this point, right? But the new bass player Tony and the drummer Phil were at the merch booth selling the merch, and
pretty lean tour.
And someone else I kind of knew that was in the crowd said, "Oh, I can't believe they got the new guys selling merch." Oh no, they go, "Who are those guys selling merch?" And I'm like, "That's the fucking bass player." And he's, you know, "Oh, the new guys. I don't want to see the new guys." I'm like, "Well, they're not exactly new now. They've been in the band for, like, in, you know, 12, 13 years," because this was 2003 by this point. So anyway, great album, and I am going to play the song Jerk off of this one. So yeah, enjoy Jerk by the Buzzcocks off of Buzzcocks from 2003. Short, simple songs, can't beat it, right?
Good, yeah.
Good stuff. All right, T, what's next for you?
All right, so we're jumping all the way to 1992. It's funny, you asked me what my relationship was with the Ramones at this point. So I you know, talked about the Mania. I love the Mania. It came out in 88 or whatever it is. had the CD, listened to it incessantly. Was vaguely aware of the, you know, the Brain Drain album coming out, but this, but the Mono Bizarro was when I really, I had been listening to it for about 5 years at this point. Mono Bizarro was the one that really got me back into the band. I think this was the probably the best later Ramones album.
Interesting.
It sounds good. It sounds like a Ramones album.
It does, yeah.
Had a couple great songs on it. Had Censor Shit, of course, which was about the PMRC, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. I don't remember, a couple episodes ago. Which
Tip of Gore, right?
People remember that, yeah. And, of course, the big hit song on this was Poison Heart, which, man, if Bruce Springsteen would have done that, it would have been a top 10 hit, right?
Yeah.
Just a tremendously good. Dee Dee wrote it with, I don't know, some other professional songwriter. So Dee Dee was out of the band at this point. But, and CJ had been playing with him. And CJ, you know, Joey, I don't know why Joey gave up some of his vocal things, but, you know, CJ sang a couple songs on every one of the later albums. So I picked a Dee Dee. I pick a CJ song, didn't I?
You picked Strength to Endure.
Yeah, I picked a CJ song.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is one of my kids love this album. We used to listen to it in the car and stuff. This one and Brain Drain. And so, yeah, so this is a CJ song. He started doing vocals on some of the songs. And like I said, I just love this album. And the front cover is sort of psychedelic looking, Neil, Mono Bizarro. And when Johnny said they were looking too old to be on the cover, like, this is how you do it. You just sort of blur their faces. So
I'm just reading a bit about this on Wikipedia. Epitaph offered, because they'd left Sire by this time, obviously.
Yep.
Brett Gurewitz of Epitaph tried to sign them.
Yep.
And they
kind of, in hindsight, say, yeah, we should have done that. That was the young hip punk label, and they probably could have
gotten
some from people.
So the Radioactive Records was Gary Kerfers, the band's manager. That was he put that label together. And you're right, they could have probably been huge again if they'd signed to Epitaph, and instead they signed to this weird dinky Radioactive Records, which that's why it's probably so difficult to find the original vinyl of this, right?
Well, I think that was a Johnny thing. Again, once again, Johnny ran that band with an iron fist. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah.
And you read any account of it, and there's a couple reasons for that. But if you read going back in the history of it, Joey was such as just like a gimp almost, and Johnny was like a tough guy, and he just literally just used. Gimp. And it was Johnny's band. He put the band together. This was his band. There was no question about it. And the fact that
hold on a second.
For Johnny, you probably wouldn't have heard that. You wouldn't know who the Ramones are.
Yeah, true enough. But I was just about to say, it might be the only podcast that you hear Joey called a gimp.
Well, I highly recommend that you read I Slept With Joey Ramone, which is the one written by his brother, Mickey Lee. Mm-hmm. It's brutal, man, because everybody loves Joey. So you hate to hear anything really negative about Joey, but Joey was such a dick to his brother. And screwed them over. And they talk about, like, the first album. Like, they went in to make it, and they had a bunch of friends on it and all these people. And Johnny didn't want to credit anybody else on the album. So there was, like, nobody ever got credit for being on. Like Mickey was on the first album and some other people. They never got any credit for it. And but Joey and Monty's book, too, On the Road with the Ramones. Monty Melnick, their tour manager, I think he was. But Joey was a deeply disturbed individual, man. I mean, in a different life, he would have lived in a group home and shit himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that he was able to do the Ramones is pretty amazing. Because obviously, unbelievably talented guy, great voice, great lyricist, you know, a poet. But yeah, he was not a normal dude, definitely.
Well, he had like really bad OCD and stuff, right?
He had really bad OCD. He, you know, he spent some time in an asylum. He was pretty out there.
Wouldn't change his pants, right? Didn't his pants basically fall
his
off
apartment
of
was just like a rat hole.
Yeah.
Just, you know, Monty tells about, like, they get back from a tour and he'd drive back to his apartment and Joey would make him drive him back to the airport because he didn't tap something three times or something.
That kind of thing.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Yeah. So, Yeah, what song are we going
to
play?
Strength to Endure, CJ singing.
Strength to Endure from Mondo Bizarro from 1992.
Oh, this is also the first time I ever saw them play live, Neil. They did that famous tour with Social Distortion, which I know you saw.
I did, yeah.
I saw it up in Big Rapids, Michigan, up at Fair State University. It was one of my all-time favorite shows. As a matter of fact, if I had a time machine and could go back to any show ever that I saw, this would be the one.
Yeah, I saw it at the Aragon, I think, they played in Chicago. Okay. I thought Social, because that was when Social D were in their fucking pomp, man.
They were their prime, man.
So I thought Social D actually blew them off the stage, but that's...
Well, you know, it's funny, I was probably more into Social D at that point than I was Ramones, but it was just still a thrill to see the Ramones. I mean, I remember when they dropped that big giant, you know, it was in a theater, the big giant Ramones NYC backdrop, and it just like, I love those songs. You know, they knock out like 30 songs.
Yeah, when the pinhead comes on with the Gabagool bass. I mean, that was it's fucking awesome. But yeah, Social D were just fucking awesome.
I mean, I love Social D, but I would love to go back and see the Ramones again. That would be...
Last time I saw the Ramones, I didn't particularly enjoy it, but anyway.
Well, last time I saw anything Ramones related, it was Richie solo, so enough said.
Oh, yeah, well, that doesn't count.
Butcher and a few Ramones songs, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't count. Anyway, yeah, Strength to Endure off of Mondo Bizarro. Shame they didn't all have the strength to endure, and they all had to die so early.
CJ's still kicking, though.
Yeah, CJ's still
he's
kicking.
He's certainly the most dignified of the former... he's the torchbearer of the former members.
Yep, 100%.
Marky still does a Ramones act, essentially. I haven't seen much touring action from him, but he was doing something called Marky Ramones Punk Rock Blitzkrieg. And he just puts a band together and... I don't know if he sits on an elevated throne in the middle or what he does, but he just plays drums and they play Ramones songs. So
he did
some original stuff after the Ramones, but yeah. Mark Ramone, the Intruders and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
the Intruders. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know how we feel about Marky. Marky's a mixed bag. He kind of irritates me. It's kind of a pompous windbag. His book. You know, the thing, I was saying that the Mickey Lee book showing the negative light on Joey to a certain extent, but at the end of the day, Mickey loved Joey. I felt like Marky was just kind of a dick to Joey and Johnny, and they were dead at this point, and I didn't like it. I didn't like the way he handled the situation. Made some accusations against Johnny that I hadn't heard before. Just, I don't know. Wasn't my favorite.
He got put in his place by Johnny Rotten at that weird...
Yeah.
John Varvatos.
Why don't you get drunk again and drive your car into a jewelry store again, Marky?
Yeah. Did he say he was going to knock his wig off or some shit? It was. Yeah. Oh, no, that was Howard Stern.
That was Howard Stern. Yeah, they were accusing each other. You're a drug. No, you're a drug. You're a wig. No, that was great. Oh, I might go on YouTube later and watch it again.
Yeah, fucking awesome. Yeah, good old Joey and Marky there.
Yeah.
yeah, so that was Mondo Bizarro. Good album. Good album, that. Every song is a good one.
Yeah.
Heidi is a head case. Cabbie's on crack is funny as fuck. The
Crusher.
Yeah. No, the Crusher's off the last one, isn't it? The Crusher's off Adios Amigos.
Forget it.
Yeah. Job That Ate My Brain, Poison Heart, Anxiety. Yep. Anxiety.
And then they reprised touring, which they've been kicking around for 10 years.
For 10 years. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, okay, good stuff. All right, so let's fast forward to the boys from Manchester again. So the next time we see the Buzzcocks doing anything was another return to form. 2006, they released an album on Cooking Vinyl.
I guess they stayed on form then.
Yeah, from that previous 2003 Buzzcocks album. Flatpack Philosophy.
I have that one. I grabbed the CD out of what time?
2006, Cooking Vinyl. It's got that brown cover, and it's almost back to the classic kind of artwork. It's got like the stick figures and stuff like that. So a lot of thought went into the artwork and the production on this one. It sounds great. The songs are great. They're sharp. They're powerful. I think it's a really, really good album. Production is tight and clear.
I remember enjoying it. I haven't listened to it for years, but I remember enjoying it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny. Anyone listening to this that knows these songs will say, Neil, you keep just playing the Pete Shelley songs, and there's a reason.
Says they're better.
There's a reason for that. Yeah, they're better. And to me, the Pete Shelley songs are the Buzzcocks. Steve Diggle's fine, but his songs are just kind of generic, straight ahead. Especially in the later years, they're just kind of generic to me. So Pete Shelley is the one that always throws in a surprise with one of the melodies, or keeps it kind of spiky or something. Whereas Steve Diggle's are kind of obvious. So, Flatpack Philosophy 2006, same band again: Pete, Steve, Tony Barber, and Phil Barker. So this would have been 5th album with this lineup. So yeah, those guys stayed in the band for a while, but they left. Phil Barker left right after this album, though. So we'll get to that in a minute. So the song I'm going to play is a song called Reconciliation, which is a great fucking song. This could be right up there with one of their early classics. So let's listen to that. This is Buzzcocks with Reconciliation off of Flatpack Philosophy in 2006.
Been contemplating lately what you mean to me. You are the one I care about, the only one I love. But though we may be separated by the sea, it's still just you I'm dreaming of. You must believe me. I'm gonna tell you something you already know. How to set for me. The promise, you know. I have this dream of yearning, burning.
right. Buzzcocks are reconciliation.
So tell me, you know, does flat pack philosophy mean something? Is that an English term? I always wondered what that meant.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so you've listened to the album then, yeah. There's a lot of songs about how modern society, it's like if you go to IKEA, you can buy everything you want.
Oh, and it's, flat. And
it's all in a flat pack, yeah. And in fact, one of the songs has like...
That was about cigarettes or something.
No, it's about modern commercialism and things like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, there's some deepness going on under there, underneath the covers. So, yeah. So, 2006, that was the last album for Phil Barker, the drummer. He left in 2006 and was replaced by a guy called Danny Farrant, who was still in the band today. So Danny Farrant has been in the band for 18 years because he's still in the Incarnation with Steve Diggle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Steve Diggle never left.
Steve Diggle never left, no.
Pete Shelley actually left for a little bit, right?
Well, no, the band broke up. The band broke up in 81.
So I know he did some solo stuff.
He did. Steve
Diggle. Homo Sapien is kind of famous, right?
Yeah, Pete Shelley did his two famous solo electronic albums in like 82, 83, 84.
Did you listen to that?
I did. I actually went to see him live, believe it or not. Hmm. When I was my freshman year in Manchester, 81, Pete played at a small wine bar. In the basement of a club, and I saw him playing. He had a synth player, and he had an acoustic guitar, and he had.
That sounds terrible.
He was never a fashion maven. He had a shirt and tie, and he had a Batman tie on for some reason. I don't know why. Wow. That's always stuck with me.
Was it good?
It was. I mean, if you like that first album, that solo album,
I don't know
the one with Homo Sapien. And it's got some okay songs on it. I mean, I was just a huge Buzzcocks fan, so seeing Pete Shelley,
in a tiny place,
like that was pretty cool.
That's
cool. Even though it was kind of sad, but anyway, he had that solo thing going on. And Steve Diggle, in the meantime, when they were broken up, had a band called Flag of Convenience, and so they did a couple of straight ahead kind of songs. But then he started putting the Buzzcocks name back in there. He called them Buzzcocks FOC, Flag of Convenience, for a while.
Mm.
So he was always kind of a slag when it came to the name. He didn't want to get away from it. So
now there's nobody to argue with him.
Yeah, because he's the only last man standing, except for the other guys are alive, except for Pete Shelley, but they just want nothing to do with it anymore.
Mm.
Yeah,
probably sitting in their country homes, retired.
I don't think Steve Garvey and John Marr, the original drummer, had enough money to become to become rich and live in a country home. And it's funny, I always thought it was John Mayer, the drummer's name, but apparently it's pronounced John Marr, which kind of is confusing because the other Johnny Marr came from Manchester at about the same time.
Your other hero, your guitar hero, Johnny Marr.
The most boring man in the fucking planet. Yeah, not a fan.
So, Neil, you know what? That brings us to your favorite Ramones album, the one you don't... It's like your child you don't recognize.
Yes, I've wiped this guy out.
The Acid Eaters album.
Ass Eaters.
It's funny, because you told me something about when we were discussing it. You said it originally started out to be... Was it supposed to be just an EP?
Which would have made sense to me. An EP would have made sense of like, all covers. Because for those that don't know, Acid Eaters, they decided to do an album...
It's all covers. 60s covers.
All 60s covers, which... sounds like a terrible idea, and actually was a terrible idea. But if it had just been an EP of four songs, wouldn't have been so bad, right?
Yeah. Well, the best thing about it is probably the bizarre cover, which I'm sure you hate, but the Acid Eaters. Yeah, so what can you say about this? It's got bad Bob Dylan cover. It's got a cover of Ted Nugent, the Amboy Dukes. It's got Jefferson Airplane. I know a lot of these. It's got The Who. It's got a bunch of stuff that I know the songs, but I don't even know who it's by. Like The Shape of Things to Come, I don't know who that's by. I know the song, but yeah, it didn't really work. It wasn't really good. They never played anything live off of it. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I think that was by The Creation, wasn't it? The Shape of Things to Come. I think
could be. But once again, you're talking about a band that sold a consistent amount of albums, but never sold a huge amount of albums. I don't know if this was just some filler or I don't know. It's definitely, if there's one Ramones album you don't own, this is the one. But that being said, all the songs weren't terrible. And as a matter of fact, you know, CCR is one of those bands that punk bands love to cover, right? I mean, I've heard several versions of Fortunate Son. It's almost like an honorary punk song.
Mm-hmm.
And here the Ramones do Have You Ever Seen the Rain, and I think they do a good job with it, and I think it's a pretty good song. For fear of being sued by both the Ramones heirs and John Fogerty.
I think Linda might come knocking on your door.
Exactly. Yeah. She can come knock on my door anytime. She looks pretty good for a 75-year-old woman or whatever she is. Wow, she still like dresses exactly the same. You ever see her out?
Yeah, she's wearing like the old 60s knee-high boots. And,
yeah, she dresses exactly the same way as she did. She's pretty foxy. Yeah. Foxy enough for Joey and Johnny, Neil. Foxy enough for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, this is Ramones covering CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Have You Ever Seen the Rain?
It's a common fall, the snow I know. It's been coming for some time. When it's over, so this is it. It will rain a sunny day, I know. Shining down like water. I wanna know, have you ever seen the rain? I wanna know. Coming there, sunny day. Yesterday and days before, summer's cold and rain is hard. I know, been that way for all my time. Till forever I only go through a circle fast and slow. I know, I can't stop my wonder. I wanna know, have you ever seen rain? I wanna know, have you ever seen the rain? Coming there, sunny day. Yeah! Someone told me that it's a common fall, the storm. I know, been that way for all my time. When it's over, so this is the rain, the sun, the day. I know, shining down like water. I wanna know, have you ever seen the rain?
I'm glad you chose that one, not the horrible cover of Surf City. I don't know, man. There's some dogs on this album, man. It really is. I mean, if you're taking the four best ones...
I mean, my back pages and stuff, it's just brutal, right?
Yeah, if you took the four best ones off of this and put an EP, it actually would have substituted. That actually would have been okay. I wouldn't mind that at all. But as it is, it's way too much. And this is another one where, not that I want it, but the vinyl is... the original vinyl, anyway, on Chrysalis, right? Very, very
well, Chris,
difficult.
It was Radioactive in the States and Chrysalis.
Oh, in Europe. Yeah. Chrysalis in Europe, yeah.
I'm curious what they're going to do, because all the Ramones albums have been reissued, except for these last three, Mondo Bizarro, Ass Eaters, and Adios Amigos. And I wonder if they're going to do like a box set like they did with the other ones. Like, that would be... put that up for Record Store Day. Forget this 1975 demos or whatever, which might be great. I don't know. I mean, I love those Pleasant Dreams demos. I actually like those. I prefer those to the record.
Mm.
But I struggle with this stuff, you know, because the bands, especially, you know, Ramones are gone, obviously. They don't have any control over this stuff. There's a reason they released what they released and didn't release what they didn't release. So we're kind of living in a great era for bootlegs, but it's like that Social Distortion bootleg. You know, there's a whole version of the album, White Light, White Heat, White Trash, that never came out.
Right.
And it's more of a country fried type of sound. And you can get it on an import. It's a good sounding record, but it's like Social D didn't want that in my hands, but I want it in my hands, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know what to think about all this stuff. like I said, especially with the Ramones, it's just their estates milking them for everything they're worth. It's not like the band has any say in this stuff. So
yeah, so Linda owns half of it. Who owns the other half?
It used to be Linda and Mickey, Joey's brother.
Mickey Lee,
but
right, yeah.
I saw that Mickey sold Joey's interest, which was, he sold his publishing. It was like $2 or $3 million. It was like, or a couple million bucks. So
who did he sell it to?
So I guess it's Linda and some conglomerate, unless she sold Johnny's too. I don't know.
No, I think she seems, because she seems pretty litigious too, right? She's,
I guess.
Yeah.
She's doing, I'll tell you what, man, when I'm gone, I hope that Mrs. Trauma does half as good a job of keeping my name out there as she does with Johnny, though. She really, you know, every year they have the Johnny Ramone thing at this, at the cemetery or whatever. She really does seem to, you know, I mean, I don't know what she's doing the rest of the year, but, you know, she's, and she gets some big names out there. Because Johnny, when he moved to Hollywood, you know, he moved to L.A. at the end of his life when he retired. You know, he was friends with, you know, sucky bands, but famous people, you know, Pearl Jam and, like, Rob Zombie and people like that. He had a lot of, like...
Yeah, everybody wanted to suck up to him to the end.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what really
annoyed
me. And
Joey had some good friends, too. You know, Joey was the same way, but it makes me sad that, like, he was listening to U2 when he died. Imagine hanging out with freaking Bono on your deathbed? No thanks.
Yeah, so yeah, that's right. Bono was with him at his deathbed. Yeah, that's right.
Bono comes to visit me, I will also die.
Yeah, well, he's going to live forever. Bono's going to live forever, so, you know, he's... That's too bad. I was going to say something particularly interesting. Oh, yeah, it's just funny that such proud New Yorkers have always made such a big deal about it. Like the old, well, I know Johnny did. I think Dee Dee moved to L.A. at the end, didn't he? Isn't he buried in that same cemetery?
Yes,
in L.A.
Yes.
Yeah, in the Hollywood Cemetery.
He doesn't. I really would like to go to that just to see that the Johnny,
the statue,
looks awesome. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. There's a famous picture of Morrissey like laying flowers or whatever at the Johnny statue, which is cool.
A couple of right-wing zealots celebrating.
Yeah, I got into an argument with someone on Facebook about Johnny. Someone posted something about Johnny and Linda or something, and someone said, "Oh yeah, dude, Johnny stole Joey's girlfriend." And it's like, Jesus, shut the fuck up, dude. It's
like, Joey never had much for long-term relationships. It was, and they've been married for like 20 years. Get over it, you know.
And it wasn't like Johnny did it for a grudge fuck. They got married and lived together for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
I mean, it,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't just something casual.
Joey was a gimp, as we discussed earlier.
People just love to hate on Johnny, and that makes me love Johnny even more.
Well, it is true, because yeah, it's once again, oh, he was right wing politically. Well, once again, he was also the reason you've heard of the Ramones, and he was the reason those guys could ever retire. Or, you know, I mean, it's like, you need somebody like that sometimes, you know?
Oh, fuck yeah.
It's like Jack Nicholson, A Few Good Men. You need guys like me on the wall. You come in your faggoty white suit, you know? You will need me.
You can't handle the truth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's him.
I think we're going to have to do a whole...
One of my favorite lines ever, him looking at Tom Cruise. You come in here in your faggoty white suit.
Oh, I'm going to have to lift that.
You couldn't make that now, right? You couldn't do that.
No, there's so much stuff you couldn't do.
You get canceled.
Now. Yep.
I mean, I heard that drill sergeants can't even really scream at you and call you a maggot anymore or anything.
Dear.
Just be like, could you please try a little harder?
You've seen Band of Brothers, right?
Yes. It's been quite a few years.
Yeah,
but yes.
I'm watching that again at the moment, along with the new, you know, the Flyers one. The one.
Yeah, I have Apple TV till the end of the month, but I think I'm not going to be able to have time.
Oh, it's really good. There's only been the first 5 episodes so far. Some of the special effects are fucking phenomenal. Just phenomenal. Americans being silly, bombing during the day, but there we go.
Yeah, you can tell we're getting old. You know, we love the little history talk.
Oh, we love
it. World War II history.
Well, talking of history, let's go to my sixth and final Buzzcocks album. Not classic Buzzcocks, but I'm not counting the Steve Diggle stuff, like I said.
Yes.
This was the one you were thinking of. This was The Way from 2014. So this was a good 8 years after Flatpak Philosophy. So by this time, Tony Barber, the bass player, had left in 2008. He'd been replaced by somebody called Chris Remington. And yeah, the drummer Phil Barker had left and been replaced by Danny Ferrant. So I guess they'd been kicking it around for a while, and then they released this album, The Way. Tom, you're making me feel ill, man, with the cameras on, and you're like swaying it about from side to side. Oh, am I coming on a trip to the toilet with Tom? Great. Anyway, yeah, so The Way came out in 2014. White sleeve. Like, again, almost like a newspaper-style image on the cover. And, yeah, so this was recorded with Pete Steve and Danny Farrant and Chris Remington. And I really particularly don't think it's particularly good. This is on 1-2-3-4 Go Records. And I don't know, man. I think the songs are pretty shit on this album. The production isn't great. I just don't think it's a very good album. It's short. It only has 10 songs. Almost seems like they had to put out something to keep relevant or something. It's, I don't know, man. Almost feels like they were jacking it in to me. But some people I know like it because it was a new Buzzcocks album and it came out on white vinyl. So I know some people like it. So, what song?
Is jacking it in? Is that like British for phoning it in? I've never heard that
phoning,
expressed before.
Yeah. About to end, phoning it in, kind of thing. Because I think by this time, actually, Pete had moved to was it Bosnia or somewhere? He met a lady and also got married and moved to Bosnia. That's where he died. He died in
really,
somewhere in Eastern Europe. Yeah.
If you're lucky someday and you're really successful and you work hard, you can move to Bosnia.
Yes, very Bosnian bride. Yes, yeah. It was something like
mail
that.
Order news.
Yeah,
picture out of a catalog.
Which again surprised me because I thought he was famous.
Yeah, he swung
gay. Players,
right?
Yeah. So, must have done. Because don't you know we're Homo sapien too? Yeah.
Well, I remember. Yeah, he wasn't particularly closeted about it, right? Like, I think he was.
Didn't seem to be. Yeah. I mean, that Homo sapien song was as out as you could be.
I guess. You know,
it's a gay dance club classic. But yeah, did you have that album, The Way? The one that
I
came
didn't,
out?
But I remember when it came out. 1-2-3-4 out of Oakland, California. I used to do a lot of mail ordering from a label called No Idea, which is down in Gainesville, actually.
Yeah,
I remember that. They always carried they always distributed 1-2-3-4 Go stuff. Anyway, I think they ended up screwing over all the labels they used to distribute, so they're kind of persona non grata, that No Idea Records. But they did like Hot Water Music and a lot of they were a regional kind of label. They bought a lot of stuff back in the day.
Yeah. So The Way, it was a white sleeve, had like a almost like a it's supposed to be like a sprayed on the wall kind of thing, like Banksy would do, kind of a graffiti thing.
Welcome to 2008.
This was 2014.
2014, sorry.
It's not a bad album sleeve. It's got the classic logo. It's that kind
sleeve's
of thing.
Sleeve's fine. The song's not that great.
Sleeve's fine. Song's not that great.
So that was That was the last Pete Shelley record. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was the last Pete Shelley record. Like I say, it's not particularly good.
That's too bad.
So I'm going to play I Did My Best. I found which one did I pick? I picked Keep On Believing, it's an okay song. It's like the best song on the record. So yeah, so this is Buzzcocks. Keep On Believing off of The Way 2014.
Believe it. Are you smiling? Are you frowning?
There you go. They're the Buzzcocks with Don't Stop Believin'.
Yeah. Keep on believing.
Just yeah, a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, only 10 songs on the record. And half of those are by Steve Diggle, so you know that you can bypass some of those, right? Yeah. Yeah, I seem very bitter towards Steve Diggle, don't I? Yeah.
Well, it's funny, if they came around today and played, who knows, where are they playing now? They probably play like Cobra Lounge or something, right? Small.
Exactly.
Would you go see him?
With just the Steve Diggle version? No, yeah. I wouldn't go see him. No.
See, unfortunately, I only saw them one time, and it was at Riot Fest during the day. And, you know, I got to hear, you know, Ever Fall in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have, and What Do I Get, and, you know, the songs I wanted to hear, Orgasm Addict and whatever. But it was, you know, they only got like a half hour.
Yeah, it's pathetic, isn't it?
That's the problem with Riot Fest, right? Like, oh, man, look at all these bands that are playing at 4 o'clock in the afternoon for a half hour.
Yeah. Which would be the same as that other festival.
We might have to record another one this weekend so we can talk about some of these other things.
So, actually, the one thing I didn't mention about this record, I just remembered, and this might be why it was so short and all that kind of stuff, they actually did this on Pledge Music. They actually raised money for this album themselves, and they did the Pledge thing.
So why did they need a label then?
And the Pledge came out first. So it wasn't on a real label. It was just on, you know, they released it themselves. And then the other labels picked it up, I guess, a few months later. 1, 2, 3, 4 Go Records picked it up a few months later and released it in the U.S.
They used to have 1, 2, 3, 4 Go had decent distribution back in the day. I mean, for a punk label.
Yeah.
So.
And they jumped on the old, you know, they started doing all the different colored versions and stuff like that. So they jumped on that bandwagon too. And it looks like there was a later version of it released just a few years ago. I don't know if this was a...
some extra good tracks.
It does. It has a second album. It's a double album. So it has which I've never heard.
So double albums to do that thing where it just puts like 2 to 3 songs on each freaking side. Oh, I hate that.
No, it's got extra. It's got like 7 extra songs, some home demos and stuff like that. So maybe it's shit. But
I mean, I didn't if you don't like existed. The original, if you don't like the recorded versions, you'll love the home demos. I'm sure.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I hate that stuff. You know, stop clogging up the pressing plants. I don't know. Maybe they're not clogged up anymore. But with all these freaking Nirvana bedroom demos and all that, we don't want that. But that stuff should be on CD. You don't want that on vinyl. It's a waste of money and time.
Exactly. Or on a B-side of an EP or something. And Pete Shelley, of course, died 6th of December 2018. I was getting my oil changed at a Jiffy Lube when I read that, when that information
came. Is that a euphemism or
no? It sounds like it, doesn't it? No, nothing is lucky, unfortunately. I was sitting in a dirty ass Jiffy Lube.
Did you have to tip
$20? Dirty ass Jiffy Lube, you know, for the a grease monkey and doing the shit in the
So how did you hear? Did you see it on Facebook or something or what?
Yeah, I came across the newswire or something as I was waiting for my car to get done.
There's a special newswire for old punkers that most people don't know about. We're not going to share where that is for you, but we get all your info.
I was very surprised again because it was like you said he died in Bosnia or whatever, and I'm like, what?
He wasn't that old.
What the fuck was he doing there? He was, let's see, 2018.
Early 60s?
He was probably born in about 58, maybe. He was a bit older than me, obviously. Maybe 55.
So he's about 60.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, 60-something. I think he died of a heart attack, I think.
A couple of the bands that are still around that bother me the most, I think, are the Buzzcocks, even though I'd probably go see them, like I said, even though I'm sure Steve Diggle does a horrible job singing the Pete Shelley songs.
Yeah, he was 60. He was 63. 63 when he died, yeah.
More than 55. And the other one is The Business, because...
Estonia.
Oh, Estonia.
Yeah, so you can see why I got confused, right?
Because, like, The Business, you know, Mickey Fitz was the only original guy left in The Business. He kept The Business going. Then when he died, some of the old guys took it over again. The guys from, like, the early 80s lineup. Which, where were they when he was still alive? They could have done something good, right?
Right.
But, so the guys who aren't Mickey Fitz have The Business name again. It just irritates me. Once again, I'd probably go see him, probably have a great time, but it just...
Well, at least I think with that, with The Business, it's isn't it like the actual all original band except for Mickey Fitz?
I don't think it's all, but I think it's a couple.
Steve Whale, right? Steve Whale, yeah.
The Kent guy, maybe something Kent.
Gary Kent.
I don't know. But anyway, so now
that's it for me for the Buzzcocks.
So we get to the sad end of the Ramones.
End of the Ramones.
So they called their shot, right? Johnny said, "I'm breaking up the band. That's it. We're gonna do one more tour." And one thing, the one cool thing about the Ramones is they were able to kind of get that victory lap at the end and got a lot of love.
Yeah,
a lot of people sort of, you know, recognized them. Although they never, I mean, I think the Ramones at the end, they would have rather had their cash than the recognition. But they were able to go on some big, high-profile tours. They did Lollapalooza. The second time I saw them was with White Zombie, bizarre double bill. But yeah, they put out their last album. It's called Adios Amigos. Once again, a real solid album, start to finish. It's got a Tom Waits cover. Let's see, do I have the track list in front of me?
Yeah, The Crusher. About a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
Life's a Gas. Cretan Family is a great song.
Yep.
Scattergun. That's a CJ song.
The last song, Born to Die in Berlin. A little reference to Dee Dee there. A little Dee Dee.
Yeah. The first track, I Don't Want to Grow Up. That's the cover, right?
That is a Tom Waits song. Yeah.
Right. Making Monsters for My Friends is really good.
Yep.
Yeah, it's solid, man. It's a solid record. Now, can't say the same for the fucking album artwork.
Yeah, it's a little wonky.
Yeah.
It is two T-Rexes wearing sombreros, which I'm pretty sure you get canceled for that now. I mean, that's cultural appropriation, right?
Adios, amigos.
I mean, do you really think those dinosaurs are Mexican?
Well, perhaps they were. They have to keep the set up their eyes somehow.
They should have them like, you know, breaking a pinata or drinking tequila or something. Maybe
But the question is, with those tiny little arms, how would they put the sombreros on their heads?
That's a good question.
That's right.
Or drink tequila. So, I went a little bit of a deeper cut on this one, and I love this song. I just listened to it today. She talks to rainbows. And it's, you know, Joey would be dead within, you know, 5 years of this record coming out or whatever. And this is like quintessential Joey to me.
Yeah.
She talks to rainbows. She talks to trees. So, anyway, yeah, listen to, of course, yeah, the Ramones finished up. They had offers, I guess, for some really big money down in South America.
Yeah, they were huge in Brazil and shit like that, right?
And they still are. Like, I think CJ and Richie and Marky go to South America. They're still huge. They had some money, big money tours on the table, but I think by this point, Joey's health was not good. He, of course, had lymphoma or some kind of cancer.
Was it leukemia?
I don't remember. But he was beating it for the most part. Like I said, that's actually not what killed him. But, yeah, so they hung it up. And it's an amazing thing because Joey and Johnny didn't speak to each other for
lymphoma.
I mean, years. I mean, it wasn't the whole run of the band, but probably after those first few albums, Johnny and Joey did not speak to one another. They were not friends. When they played their final gig in L.A., they just left. They never said goodbye. They didn't shake hands. There was no hug. Can you imagine that? Or, I mean, even if at your job, when you go to retire, you're going to shake some hands. You're going to give some hugs. You're going to, you know, nice working with you. 20-something, 22 years. Just that. Smell you later. Mic drop. Walk out. When Joey was dying, Johnny never reached out to him. It's a bizarre set of circumstances.
That's because probably Bono was in the way.
Yeah, exactly. He's hanging out with his LA friends.
It says here that when he died, he was listening to a U2 song.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible?
Thanks, U2.
Hope it was Sunday, Bloody Joey. Sunday. No, if it wasn't Sunday, Bloody Sunday, it's terrible.
It was a song called In a Little While, which I don't know that song. Yeah.
Well, I don't
know. Wow, Joey's funeral was attended by Tommy, Richie, and CJ, but not Johnny.
Buried in a Jewish cemetery. He is... Joey Ramone, you'd think he'd be a big Italian guy, but he's Jewish, right?
So Joey died first, right? Or Dee Dee die first?
No, Joey, then Dee Dee, then Johnny.
Then Johnny, okay.
Tommy, only a few years ago.
Right, yeah.
But even he wasn't that old.
Right. I mean, none of them were. It's so crazy to think that the fucking Rolling Stones are mainly still alive.
It's funny, and I wrote a song about that when I was young.
The Ramones are all fucking dead.
About how the Ramones are dead and freaking Mick Jagger's still strutting around like a rooster.
Having kids with different ladies.
Yeah, banging supermodels.
Yeah, banging supermodels.
Son of a bitch.
Getting his oil changed. His oil changed.
He probably does. It's probably like getting blood transfusions from virgins or something. Eating children.
Aren't we all?
But he, at least with Mick, he's a health nut.
Yeah.
Freaking Keith Richards. Holy cow. They better saw him up for science when he dies.
Pickled.
Study his insides.
Now, talking about... Oh, did we play the song yet? Let's play the song and then talk.
Let's play the song.
Yeah.
She talks to rainbows.
She talks to rainbows. Hippie.
She's a little lost girl in her own little world. She looks so happy, but she seems so sad. Oh, yeah. She's a little lost girl in her own little world. I'd like to help her, I'd like to try. Oh, oh yeah. Oh, oh yeah. She talks to birds, she talks to angels, she talks to trees, she talks to bees. She don't talk to me. Talks to the rainbows and to the seas. She talks to trees. She don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. Yeah, she drives me out of my mind. You know she drives me out of my head. You know she drives me out of my mind. You know she drives me out of my head. She talks to birds, she talks to angels, she talks to trees, she talks to bees, she don't talk to me, talks to the rainbows and to the seas, she talks to trees, she don't talk to me. She's a little lost girl in her own little world. She looks so helpless, she looks so sad. Oh, oh yeah. Oh, oh yeah. She's a little lost girl in her own little world. I like to help her, like to try. Oh, oh yeah. Oh, oh yeah. She talks to birds, she talks to angels, she talks to trees, she talks to bees, she don't talk to me, talks to the rainbows and to the seas, she talks to trees, she don't talk to me, don't talk to me, don't talk to me, don't talk to me. She don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
That was the last one from the Ramones tonight. She talks to rainbows off of Adios Amigos.
I always love those songs that seem like they're kind of like a hippie song, but it's really a dark song, you know?
Now, how do you feel about the fact that they're making a biopic?
I don't know that that's going to happen. Linda apparently has sued them, so it was supposed to be
Pete Davidson. Piece of shit, yeah.
Can you imagine... I mean, this. I'm glad Joey is dead, so he doesn't have to see this. That this is the guy. I mean, Joey was no looker, but man, they think Pete Davidson's the guy who plays you in a movie.
It's fucking ridiculous.
But you know, it's so that movie that, or I don't know if it's supposed to be a miniseries or a movie or what. I think it was going to be like a limited series. It was going to be based on that book, I Slept with Joey Ramone, that I was talking about earlier, that I do recommend. It's a good book. The reason I read it is because I thought we might be able to get Mickey on the podcast, and maybe we could. Maybe I just need to reach out to him. But, you know, if whenever I try to go through a publicist, it seems like the thread just dies eventually. So that's why now we usually just kind of go, we just reach out to people directly, you know, skip the publicist. But, yeah, I thought we were going to have Mickey on, so I read the book really quick, and I really enjoyed it. And the thing with talking to Mickey, the hell that is Mickey is that he's probably going to want to talk about his new album or something. And it's like, we just want to talk about Joey's stuff, you know? But I'm sure that's kind of like his personal hell, right?
Yeah,
so everybody just wants to talk about his brother.
Yeah, but that's why he's being invited on, for God's sakes. No one's inviting him on to talk about his musical legacy.
He was like the achiever. He was the one who was supposed to be big. His brother was the gimp, and he overshadowed him. Bad deal.
Can you hit it here first?
It's a bad deal.
Joey Ramone, the fucking gimp.
It was a bad deal for Mickey. And he did some stuff on the first Ramones album. He's not even credited as Johnny. He was the one who was originally friends with Johnny, actually. It was Mickey.
Well, it says here that he sold his rights for $10
million. $10 million
to Brookfield Asset Management. That's
if there's anyone who should be handling the Ramones catalog, it's Brookfield Asset Management. See, I wonder if Linda sold too, because if she sold, because you know, as it was, Mickey and Linda would have to agree on anything.
Right, I remember that. Yeah.
I think that's how it works, at least.
Yeah.
The early Ramones stuff, they were all credited as songwriters. That was part of their thing. Every song was by Ramones. Later on, I think they did individual songwriting, because Johnny was not really a songwriter. He was a song stealer.
So. Let me Linda, look just out. Linda, it doesn't say anything about.
She's still wearing her go-go boots from 1960 and mini. Got a bob.
Hey, settle down, Beavis. You're getting very excited about Linda Ramone over here. Yeah. Actually, she's almost the same age as me. I should be the one getting all horny over her.
Is she? Is she younger? She's like 60.
She's 63 right now.
I mean, Johnny would be at least 75 if you're alive.
Yeah. Yeah, she's only 63.
Robbing the cradle.
Man, she's foxy in this one picture.
Dude, she's good looking, man. She's a little petite little woman.
Yeah. Oh, she's got a website, lindaramone.com.
She was on, I think she was on the Punk News podcast one time. I can't remember if I was on with her or not. Or, you know, John would, whenever we did like 100 or like a 200, 300, 400, John would get a wacky list of guests. And I believe Linda came on. I wonder if she came on with us. Just reach out to her, Neil.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Reach out to her.
She'll come on and say, you better not be playing any of my husband's music.
How old were you when Johnny quit beating you?
Yeah.
Allegedly. Marky told me. Well, I don't know, Neil. That's the Buzzcocks of Ramones.
Let us know, people, if you enjoyed it, because we could certainly do it again with some other stuff.
Because now all of a sudden in my mind I'm going like, oh man, like the later catalog of The Freeze, like I love The Freeze. Their first couple albums are kind of classic. But their later, like, 90s stuff was so good, too. Like, people should hear that later Freeze music, so, or Gangrene or something. Well, you can really get into, like, some digging, because I'm sure you have some bands like that, too, other older English bands or whatever that you loved when you were a kid that really were still good later, but nobody really paid attention
to. Nobody paid attention. We'll do The Damned. How's that?
There you go. You know, that'd be a great one, because I don't know anything, like, after Machine Gun Etiquette or, well, at least the Black album, after that, I really don't know much of anything by then.
Right. Yeah. Through the Vibrators put out a bunch of albums after the classic two that people know. Yeah, the Stranglers would be fucking perfect, because the Stranglers keep releasing albums up to last year. You know.
Yeah.
But people, let us know what you thought of it. If you think it's a good concept, or if what we've said has made you want to check out some of these,
or if you'd rather hear us do 3-hour reviews of 2-hour gigs.
Yes, and talk about the weather.
Yeah, exactly. Punk.i77@gmail, Punk.i Facebook group. We've been having a lot of fun on the group.
Oh, God, the group's been blowing up.
We do need to record another episode, because I got a lot to talk about as far as what's been going on in the group and some other trends in sort of the internet world that make me laugh. So,
yeah.
So, anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate you.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for, Yeah, thanks for tuning in as always. Yeah, send us email because we haven't had a lot of good emails.
Yeah, most
recently.
Of our email now is
it's spam. Yeah, it's publicists yeah. reaching out to us with their shitty Spanish flamenco
so amazing,
gypsy
right?
bands.
French New Romantics. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yes. It's in the name, Punk Till I Die. It's in the name.
If we got a good punk band sent us an email, I'd probably just play the track because it's just so much weirdness. People that obviously are not in tune with what we're doing, and we just ended up on a list. I get that because I get literally 30 emails a day from publicists because I'm on all the lists from when I was doing so many reviews, which I'm still doing quite a few. What one did I do recently? I did the Drown. I don't know if that ran yet or not. I did a written review of the Piss, and I did one for the Drowns, and a lot of good stuff this year, man. I'm pretty happy with how things are going together.
I tell you what, it's been a fucking great year so far. We're not even at the end of February, and I've already probably got about a top eight. And I tell you what, there's a band that someone suggested on the podcast, not podcast, on the group, called Cosmic Joke.
I listened to them today, too.
They're really good, right?
Yeah.
I liked them a lot.
Problem is, I don't have Spotify Premium, so it'll play like two songs by them, and it'll jump around. Now, the next thing you know, they'll play Paint to Black or something. So,
or Paint Black. And you know what? We do have to do what we do have to do another show soon because I went out to
Siren
Records. I want to tell you all about that.
All right, I'll tell you what, Neil. Maybe this weekend we could do another episode.
All right, sounds good, buddy.
But yeah, hey, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Stay free. Keep a little
Marky. Leave a little Marky in your heart.
Keep a little Johnny in your heart.
There you go.
And some Pete Shelley.
There you go.
Some room in there, too. So, yeah, we will smell you all later on, people. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Okay, that brings us to the end of another show. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, keep a little mark in your heart, and we'll be back the same mark time, same mark channel.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Ah, ha, ha. If I get the feeling you've been cheated, good night.
What a fucking rotter.
What a load of old shit.
Thank you, fuck you, bye, boom.
Okay.